You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk. Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
25 minutes before 10, we're now in conversation with the Commander-in-Chief of the Economic Freedom Fighters, the leader of the party, Julius Malema, is joining us in the studio. Julius, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
Is it you or Mbuyiseni who is wearing very expensive perfume? Am I think it's smelling Mbuyiseni. Very,
he likes,
very
he likes
expensive things.
Stuff. Yeah, he likes those stuff. He likes smelling good.
He likes
not
things.
Expensive. No, he likes smelling good.
Juju, I want us to start in the future before we get to the present.
Yeah, sure.
Let's imagine you won the 2019 elections outright, not hung parliaments like Theresa May, and you are now the president of this country. I think, well, certainly speaking for myself, you are at your strongest politically, if I may venture an opinion, when you critique the status quo. But if you were president of this country, paint us a picture of what your vision is for our country.
Well, we'll nationalize strategic sectors of the economy, will ensure that the wealth of the country is redistributed amongst our people. We'll also expropriate land and give it to our people and give them the necessary tools to work the land. We'll reduce unemployment because many of young people are unemployed. We'll deal with the issue of free education and we'll improve the quality public health services, particularly primary health. And we'll also make sure that our people get proper quality houses, spacious houses with big bedrooms, lounge, kitchen, and a bathroom with a flushing toilet. Because flushing toilet is not a luxury; it's a necessity. There shouldn't be a black community without flushing toilet. And we'll give our people water and reliable electricity at affordable cost, particularly those who can afford to pay, and the indigent will get it for free.
So there are two questions, sets of questions around that I wanted to engage you on before we come back to Malusi and everyone else. The first is just the path to 2019.
Yes.
What is your strategy? You were decent new entrants in 2014. You did very well, despite the electorate's memory of COPE. They still took a chance on a new party. And many of us as commentators, myself included, were just wrong about how well you would do. Many of us don't want to eat the humble pie and say so. Yeah. But between now, you've got literally 2 years maximum. What is your strategy in terms of building a base from which you could potentially be in power?
We must build branches. The people who failed to defeat the ANC, all the breakaways, is because they failed to build branches in all the corners of South Africa. Because if you don't have presence in Malamulele, for instance, in Limpopo, when you talk politics, they think politics is a synonym of the ANC. Mm. So they automatically think ANC. So you ought to be present there. And then the only way of being present is by launching authentic branches, which are not just based on membership forms. They must have warm bodies, and those people must be active, attending to community issues even before they assume power. That's how people trust you, that this person can help us even when he's not in power. Imagine if we entrust some huge responsibility in some of these individuals, it is clear that we'll get a better service. Hence, the EFF said this year, it's a year of a branch. We are inculcating the culture of organization. We're inculcating the culture of building strong, mass-based branches.
Okay. Now, that's obviously your wish list in terms of where the country might be headed under an EFF presidency and how you might get there from now until the actual 2019 election. The reality is that we probably will continue being for a while in an era of coalition politics.
Absolutely.
This is true in many countries the world over. The British are about to grapple again with that as well. Can you describe the current state of your relationship with, for example, the DA? You said some stuff about them yesterday, the way they dealt with Helen Zille, for example, that have been very colorful. And overnight, I had a look at some of the issues that listeners want me to engage you on. And it seems to me like your core supporters are divided. They some think that you are diluting your politics ideologically by even voting with them, even if it's not a textbook definition of coalition politics. Just speak to me in general about how would you characterize that relationship?
Well, we outvoted the ANC out of power in metros because the corrupt ANC with the state power becomes extremely arrogant and dangerous to our people. And we said in doing so, let's try and give an opposition, some responsibility. And it's not necessarily a DA, it's a coalition led by the DA, which we are not part of. So we voted for that coalition, not only in Johannesburg, Pretoria, PE. We also did the same in KZN, voted with the IFP in the hung municipalities. We did so in Rustenburg, and did so in Free State, in Metsimaholo. So ours was to say, let's remove the ANC and put the opposition so that we reduce the arrogance of the ruling party. And it is successful. It is working. And we just have a minor, manageable problem in the Nelson Mandela between Trollip and the UDM fellow. Trollip with his white arrogance and the UDM fellow with his uncontrollable ambition for power and has got no respect for his own organization and his own leadership. But otherwise, you go to Tswane. We were very skeptical here in Johannesburg about Mashaba. Hmm. But our people are saying to us, we're working very well in those municipalities and we don't see any major problem. Our problem is that now the DA wants to do what the ANC is doing by, egg walking around Helen Zille, even when there are clear indications that Helen Zille tweeted offensive things against South Africans.
But there's an interesting clash here between pragmatism and ideology.
Yeah.
If you're in politics, you want power so that you can hopefully do the things that the public give you a mandate to do. And sometimes that means, and not the public doesn't always understand this, but sometimes it means that we have to build alliances against our better wishes because there's a bigger enemy.
You're going to have to kiss a lot of frogs before you get the best one. And that's what is happening. It's not a strategic move. It's a tactical move towards getting to where the EFF wants to go. You reduce the ANC power because you have taken billions out of their pockets in Johannesburg, which they use to contest the EFF. And then once you take resources out of the ANC, which is then immediate challenge to the EFF, then you stand a better chance of getting more votes because you and ANC are now competing from leveled field.
Absolutely. Now, look, that makes complete tactical sense to me, Julius. But you know, in this country, we want to have our cake and eat it.
Yeah.
So we want to have a society that is materially more just and more inclusive. Mm. But we also want to feel good about ourselves psychologically. So some of your supporters who want to have their cake and eat it, they would like you to have clever tactics that can get you to the union buildings. But they also, in the meantime, want to feel good about themselves psychologically. And what I mean by that is when they listen to a Helen Zille, when they see how the DA is not dealing with Helen Zille, and they see you having these complicated tactical relationships with them in some municipalities, they feel, some of them, very confused because they think, how? But he is in a tactical relationship with a party that consists of a bunch of colorblind people who are race denialists, who do not think that race matters, who pretend that class is more important than race, as if we have to choose between the two. What do you want to say to your supporters and potential new supporters who would like to support you, but who on the basis of identity politics are deeply uncomfortable when they look at some of the choices you made after the municipality elections?
Well, I can't vote for a party that allows people to steal 17 billion and do nothing. I cannot vote for a party that allows a man to build a 250 million house and do nothing. I cannot vote for a party that steals from the poor. And even when such corrupt activities are exposed, you are told that no, those things, actually, it's a white monopolist propaganda. I would rather have the DA in power and have a proper, genuine ideological contestation with the aim of capturing the state for the poor masses of our people. than to allow corruption to eat away the state when I'm busy fighting with the racist here. When I defeat the racist, there won't be a state to inherit. So we will rather defend the state and the existence of the state once we've defeated the rot which is eating away the state. Then we'll have what ordinarily everywhere people are engaged in, ideological differences, ideological contestation, including fighting racism. That struggle has not stopped. We are engaged in that struggle, but there are these immediate irritations which we have to deal with decisively, and then continue with the struggle to change property relations in this country.
Fair enough. 16 minutes before 10. If you've just joined us, use the hashtag 702 Malema. And also, of course, this is being streamed live via the 702 Facebook page. And let us know what questions and themes you have for him. I'm going to open the phone lines after the news, but I want to drill down into a couple more themes with Julius. Julius, can we talk a little bit about policy specifically? And I want to stick with EFF vision.
Yeah.
So let's put the ANC aside for the moment. Our economy is in a recession. Any party that is in charge of this country right now has a terrible job of dealing with deep structural unemployment, massive inequality, some of the worst on the planet, and an economy that is now in a recession. Under your watch, if I had a magic wand and I made you president immediately, what would be your thinking for how to respond to the economic woes that the country are currently in?
We have to protect the infant industries which create jobs for our people. The reason why we are in a recession is because our production has slowed down, and competition from the outside competitors actually undermine the local production. So there must be a deliberate attempt by the state to protect our own infant industries and deliberately put resources into supporting a small, especially black business, to emerge, because it has been proven that it is through a small business that jobs are being created. We also have to create a state-owned bank which will offer our people loans without demanding the most difficult things from the people, particularly the previously disadvantaged individuals. We must ensure that those people are financially assisted by the state-owned bank with less interest, because most of them are scared to even get into debt because the interests are so unreasonable. We have to create a state-owned mining company which will participate in the mining sector without closing down any mining company, our own creation, and ensure that we compete with them and sell to the outside world with the same price the private sector sells to the outside world, and generate income ourselves directly from our natural resources. We'll also ensure that we protect and grow agriculture, because it has been proven that agriculture equally has got a potential to grow the economy, but also to create jobs for our people.
But here's the difficulty, and I'm having a look at Twitter here. There are very few people on my Twitter timeline who do not share the list of things that you mentioned at the beginning when I asked you to paint a picture of your vision. Mm-hmm. And what you've just said now as well about small businesses, the multiplier effect of creating employment by having new captains of industry. That is the end goal in terms of getting to a bigger pie and a more economically just distribution of that pie amongst people. But there seems to be a lot of skepticism about the mechanism. And a lot of people are tweeting that you're not giving enough detail on the how. So let's maybe keep it practical. We already have examples of state-owned companies, even in diamonds, like Alexco, who do useless work. Mm-hmm. We've got SAA, who constantly has to be bailed out through my tax money and your tax money, and it continues to be useless. The state doesn't have a very good economic record of helping to grow the economy and to employ large numbers of people. Why would the state be more fit for purpose if you were in charge of it?
Well, you cannot. Let's look at the steel industry. A lot of factories have closed down in South Africa. You cannot allow that as a government which knows that the steel industries have actually employed a lot of people. You were supposed to protect such industry and make sure that it continues to create employment. If it means putting more money to rescue it, you do that. The same thing with the textile industry. It used to be fashionable. It used to create a lot of employment for our people. We have allowed it to close down under our watch. What did we do as the state to protect the textile industry? So coming to the state-owned companies, there is a company called AXA. It's doing very well. It's state-owned. It's building sophisticated buildings like airport. Airport is not like a shopping mall in Sishiu. It's very complex to build. If we can have such a company owned by the state doing such a wonderful job, why is this company not going to build airports in Africa? Because there is shortage of airports in Africa. Why can't we extend that influence into African states and generate money for the South African fiscus through this state-owned company? SAA is not inherently incompetent. The incompetent people are individuals who are corrupt, who are related to politicians, and who are protected every time they disappoint us in running state-owned institutions. Look at DINEL. DINEL used to perform very well. Transnet itself used to perform very well until it got captured by corrupt individuals. So it's not entirely correct that anything state-led and owned is inherently incompetent and it will not produce results. We ought to fight corruption and nepotism, including the deployment of incompetent cadres into strategic positions of power in this state-owned company.
And we'll get to the corruption, because that, I think, is the rot that lies at the heart of the state. I think you're right, and I think that's what
you're... The political will to do it, if it's there, we can do it. It has been done. I just gave you an example of one of the companies which is run very well and is state-owned.
But if you have strategic sectors of the economy that can do with fiscal stimulus, then you need a fiscus that actually has got some juice in it that can be used to stimulate those economies. And when you have an economy that's been growing at less than 1% and that is now in a recession, it is easier said than done, Julius, to say that under an EFF government, one of the things you'll do, besides getting rid of the corrupt public servants and hopefully having good men and women who are technically and ethically minded in there. But the other difficulty is, of course, is also that whether you or the DA or coalition were in charge tomorrow, you're going to inherit a fiscus that is pretty much dry. And you started off this conversation between you and me by having an incredibly expensive promissory note for the public. We're going to have schools, you're going to have water, free education, all of those things. You need to spend. And once you are in the driving seat of power, you suddenly, as the mayor of Joburg is discovering, are hamstrung not just by regulatory environment and different people wanting a different share of the fiscus, but you're also hamstrung by the reality that you don't have unlimited resources.
Of course, when you get into power, those realities kick in, but you have to prioritize. How do you buy an expensive locomotive which is not done anywhere else in the world? You're spending a lot of money which you don't have on unnecessary things which you can spend less. A lot of money has been wasted by politicians who want to benefit individually immediately. So the mayor of Joburg, having met those realities when he came in, through his budget, including the Tshwane mayor, they've ensured that they reprioritize and take resources to where they are needed the most, while they are still working on a strategy to generate more. And that's what the EFF government will do once we take power.
I want us to talk about land.
Yeah.
The EFF, like the DA, are very good, and some people call it judicial overreach, and some people think that we run to the courts too often. It's not a view I personally hold. I think the whole point of constitutional supremacy is always to check the exercise of public power against our constitution. And you guys seem to have been flipping between using the law when doing so can be effective to achieve some of your political and accountability role and purpose as an opposition party. And then at other times, you have rhetoric on a public platform around how we deal with the land question that seem to suggest we need to go outside the constitutional framework. Can I get some clarity? Can you describe for me in your own words, if someone said to you, just at a high level, what is the EFF position right now on the land question? How would you respond to that?
We want the state to be a custodian of the land. The state must own the land and then allocate it to all of us according to a clear purpose of what we want to do with that piece of land. Because today, the land in the hands of individuals is idling, whereas there are a lot of people who are landless and who do not have even, you know, a small piece of land to call it home. So the EFF will say they pass the law within the confines of the Constitution, and if the Constitution doesn't allow, amend the Constitution to allow that the state becomes the custodian of the land. And then if you want to open a factory, or if there is a factory already existing on this piece of land, let it be declared that we want to be given a permission to continue to use this piece of land to have a factory which produces the following. Let the purpose of the land be of using the land be outlined clearly to the state, and let it be allocated for that purpose. So that if there is any idling land which is not utilized for any productive purpose in this country, it can always be allocated to those who want to use it to continue to grow the country and its economy.
And of course, one hot mess we're all sitting with in this country is that the state doesn't know how much land it has.
Absolutely.
How much land lies fallow, who has it. They don't even have a gender and a demographic audit. Yes. But despite that, you had said previously, Julius, quote, land must not only be available to the white minority. We are not chasing the whites away. We are saying you have too much land. How do you know how much land white people have?
Of course, it has been confirmed that even by the Department of Land Affairs, that black people own less than 13% of the land because of the land acts which were passed, which did not allow black people to buy a land. And we are aware that majority of the remaining land is in the hands of the white minority.
Should they give it to us?
No, they should not give it to us. We must share it. We don't want them to give us the land. Where will they be? We are saying to them, you came here uninvited. You have now been naturalized here, and then we have accepted that you are in our midst. And therefore, let us now share not only the land, but the wealth of the country.
And if they are selfish and they don't?
Absolutely. If you are selfish, you are going to have to expropriate. And that's what the conversation we're having now is the most peaceful conversation, where all of us should now throw in suggestions on how practically we can share the land without any drop of blood on the floor. And that's why the EFF insists on this issue of the land. And what I'm happy about is that almost everybody now is coming to the party. They are all saying, well, you are unreasonable. We think the land can be shared like this. And that's a conversation we need. Ultimately, something will come.
Worst case scenario, if they don't share the land voluntarily and we have to expropriate it, should we compensate them at all?
No, we can't compensate for a land which was taken through a genocide. It means we'll be thanking them for killing black people. We cannot do that. Let us share. They've benefited a lot from this land. And let them now accept that, now it is time to share with these people. Of course, we've eaten. These people are even so polite. They are not demanding that we pay the royalties for having used this land and not shared anything with them. They are saying from now going forward, we're beginning to share.
We're in conversation with Julius Malema, the leader of the EFF. We're going to take a break. Then news. On the other side of news, we talk about state capture. Yesterday, he had a presser in which he centered what's happening at Transnet. I'm going to ask him any exclusives about the rest of the state being looted. And then I'm going to open the lines for you to speak directly to the Commander of Chief. And you can also, of course, tweet us throughout your questions, your comments for Julius. Hashtag 702 Malema. 8 minutes after 10, we are in conversation with Julius Malema. And remember, you can tweet your questions throughout hashtag 702 Malema. I'm going to open the phone lines in a second. Malema, yesterday, you, of course, had this massive presser where billions of rands of corruption potentially has now got to be investigated. Hopefully some people will eventually be jailed for stealing from South Africa. Malusi Gigaba has made a central entry into the Gupta leaks and emails. I want to play this clip. This is what Malusi Gigaba said less than 2 weeks or so ago. And it's quite interesting because obviously the way the Guptas work, the way they get people to be on boards and that kind of thing. I mean, we now know a lot of the detail. It's been well documented in some good books as well. The Republic of Gupta by Peter Louis Myburgh is a book I certainly recommend. It tells you the full story of when these guys came here in the 90s. This is what the minister has said when a journalist put the question to him.
Nobody has given me these emails. Nobody has told me how these emails were obtained, whether through proper means, whether they have not been fabricated. I don't know. I myself have done no wrong.
Gigaba says he's aware that they are.
The guy's done no wrong. Why are you going to lay charges against someone who's done no wrong?
Well, he will tell the judge that because, you know, when we are in court, it's different from when you are in a press conference. There, the facts are going to be presented before the judge. The emails, whether they're authentic or not, those arguments will be put before the judge. It's immaterial whether the emails are authentic or not. The things that are contained in the emails, did you do them, Malusi, or not? And if you have not done them, therefore, you have nothing to worry about. Now he says, no one told me where the emails came from. Why is that even a question? The emails are authentic. The president of the IFP has confirmed his email. Anda Bikri, the former spokesperson of Mbalula, has confirmed his email. So Ayanda Lodlo has also confirmed the email. It goes without saying that these are authentic emails and everything else contained in those emails are correct. We've got the emails in the EFF. We've assigned our security department to allocate each email to a relevant minister. Once that has been exhausted, a dossier will be presented and then will be sent to the public, to Parliament, and it will ultimately be shared with the public.
And I looked at the annexure yesterday, and there are two pages in particular of what you've released that seems to be like it might be key when you're leaving my studio here to go and lay charges. Pages 25 and 26, if you have downloaded this at home. If you haven't, I'm going to tweet that link again. And this seems to be a 2012 dated letter when Malusi Gigaba was Minister of Public Enterprises, and it was sent to the chairperson of the Denel board. Now, sometimes we get detail can be very scary. Yeah. You know, some of us are just big picture people. Mm. We're overwhelmed by what's happening. Can you, in very simple terms, explain to the public why this letter is crucial?
Well, he's speaking about the procurement of locomotives with the chairperson of Denel. Firstly, we are like, where does the chairperson of Denel come into the picture with regard to the procurement of the locomotives? But secondly, we are attaching that letter to demonstrate to South Africans that Malusi was involved in the procurement of the locomotives. And that's why he kept on reminding people to flout the rules and not even talk to Treasury, including undermining Treasury and talking to him directly if they wanted to continue with any other procurement. So he cannot say, I don't know anything about locomotives. I was not involved and all those type of things.
And this letter is going to be a key part of the evidence.
Absolutely. We are demonstrating that you were involved. You are aware of the shenanigans which were going on during the procurement of locomotives.
Yo, my Shloma, if you're listening, maybe he can come on Monday and unburden himself here on my show. Wow. Now, you said something else yesterday that fascinated me at the presser, Julius.
Yeah.
You are profoundly aware that although your press conference centered on Transnet, the state is massive. There's Denel.
Yeah.
There's the social security. Mm. There are many different parts of the system and levels of government that are capable of being looted by people who want to do so when they find willing people that they can groom and steal with. Mm. What other bombshells do you have for us?
Well,
because Transnet is not the only game.
We're working on Eskom. We're working very hard. There is some reluctance because the whistleblowers are saying even if we tell you, nothing will happen. We have shared a lot of information. yet there's nothing happening. There's a lot of corruption which happened in the Free State under Ace Magashule and his relationship with the Guptas. There's what is happening in Dinel, and there's what's happening which is not Gupta related in Sasa and the company that pays the social grants and all that. So we are working on a program to expose this corruption, and we are saying we shouldn't get tired, and we keep on speaking about it so that our people, especially whistleblowers, can say someone is doing something about it, and they don't get demoralized from exposing this shenanigans.
Two quick last ones, because then we must make the circle bigger. Yeah. Shame. The public also wants to speak to you. But two quick ones. Firstly, you are profoundly aware of two phenomena in our country right now that are part of the horror of what we have to deal with. The first is the politicization of the security cluster.
Absolutely.
And the second, of course, is how deeply incompetent someone like Sean Abrahams, for example, is. Now, if the criminal justice system and the entire justice cluster is itself politically, if not financially, captured, why do you have faith that going downtown with evidence from Prime Media is going to lead to justice when the justice cluster itself is a site of contention?
We're doing it for history. Our children, your children, and everybody's children is going, they're going to ask us, what have you done when these people were collapsing our country? And history will give an account that shame the EFF tried with everything they had, but no one was prepared to listen. And that's why I said to South Africans, you must stop this thing of just staying at home. You must stop this thing of voting the ANC, because you are part of the crime. Mm. You cannot continue to support a mafia group which is looting the state. But what is also interesting, especially in the Transnet transaction, is the fact that there is an American company involved, is the fact that there is a Canadian company involved, there is a Chinese company involved, and with the involvement of the American company, it means there are dollars involved, and therefore the American security cluster will now have a jurisdiction on this matter once you have used their company, once you have used dollar. So we are now going to be petitioning the American authorities, in China, when you commit corruption, there are serious consequences for that. We want to see the Chinese acting on these people who came here to engage in corrupt activities, including the Canadians.
Final question from me, and then we're going to take Sydney as our first caller. I wish I didn't have to say this, but unfortunately, we live in a country in which political assassinations didn't stop. They just declined since 1994. And partly we're responsible in the media for not always putting the spotlight on it. If something doesn't happen in Jozi, we tend to think it's not that important. It happens in municipalities in the northern provinces. Are you scared at all at the possibility of political assassination? We have seen, for example, the menacing threats against people like Soli Mapahira, including a gun being brandished in his direction. Have you ever felt or actually experienced your life being in danger? And what is your general attitude towards that?
Well, you know, fear is always there, but the ability to overcome it is what matters. When this information comes to you and you're like, there are so many people involved, there are so many billions of rands involved, and clearly there must be mafias and hit squads involved. What if we expose this and we get ourselves in danger? And then you remember that you owe it to the country. It's a duty to the country. And if they kill you for exposing the shenanigans, if they kill you for holding a different view, then you will die a martyr. You will not die a coward. So they can kill me. They won't kill the evidence we have produced. They won't kill the ideas that we have shared with the country. So we live in that era where we get our courage from our people. When we go to elections, you get extra 100,000 votes, and you're like, come on. It means people are now appreciating what we're doing. It means there's something right we're doing, and then that's how we keep on soldiering on, overcoming the fear, which might be there, because we're human beings. Our wives panic and say, perhaps give it to other people, don't do it yourself. Our parents as well panic, but you have to explain it to them, that someone has to take the snake out of the hole.
Okay. 18 minutes after 10, let's take a quick break, and then he's all yours. Bulumku, Sydney, I'm going to come to you first and then to you, Norman. You can ask him whatever question you want. We've got about 15 minutes with him. But before we put you on, let's just go shopping. I don't know, maybe there's an ad there that sells whatever it is that Mbuyiseni is wearing here on him today. Listen out. Sydney, good morning. Okay, Sydney, I'll come back to you. Shame you've been holding for a while, Sydney. In the meantime, let's go to Durbanville. Bulumku, good morning.
Hi, Eusebius and Julius. I want to ask Julius, you know, they say the ANC government has mismanaged the economy and that led, you know, that led to the downgrades, and the downgrades are bad for all of us as South Africans. But then they also say on their website and also other people that subscribe to their ideology that the rating agencies are part of a Western imperialist agenda, and that, you know, if the EFF took over tomorrow, those same rating agencies would be, you know, the first ones to downgrade us because they'd be afraid of the policies of nationalizing of the mines and the banks and so on. So how do they reconcile criticizing the ANC government for being downgraded by the rating agencies, but then also saying in a way that the rating agencies are an illegitimate a party that are part of a, you know.
Fair enough. Good question. You're inconsistent, Julius.
No, not at all. We don't subscribe to some imperialist institutions, but the reality is that they exist, they are there, and therefore until the left agenda is taken over the world, we are subject of such institutions. We have to subject ourselves
but to. Bulumku's point but is, if you think they're imperialist, then presumably whenever they downgrade us under the ANC's watch, the ANC shouldn't feel embarrassed.
No. We should all of us feel embarrassed because we said we subscribe to those as it matters now. There's no such a policy in government that says we do not subscribe to such institutions. So I'm saying to us, World Bank, IMF, rating agencies are there to police all of us.
But do you respect them?
We may not agree with them, but we respect,
you respect
their existence
them.
And we will continue to challenge them, particularly when it comes to transforming them to be bodies that represent all types of agendas that exist in the world, not to be one-sided and be manipulated by the West.
Okay, Simpi, good morning.
Morning, Zibas. Thank you for having me on your show. Morning, Juju, the leader of the EFF. I'd like to ask you a question on supporting Mkhwebane to be made a public protector. What's your view in that she seems not to be understanding what she's doing there vis-a-vis what the previous public protector advocate, Julie Madonsela, did, particularly the exposure of Nganta Tibekele. Secondly, the issue of the state capture. And last question, where ANC talks about nation building and non-racialism, the issue of the colored question, particularly outside the Western Cape, has always dogged the political parties in the country. What's your attitude?
Okay, we can't ask all of those questions, eh? Let's leave me and my colored fam out of it for today. Just on the public protector, because you guys voted for us. Yeah, I'm very impressed that Tempiwa even remembers her name. I can't even remember who she is.
We confessed that we made a terrible mistake, and she misled us through her interview. She did a very good interview compared to the rest of those who were there. And we thought she was someone very credible. One of the things that we have asked our security department to look into, because these emails are too many, we just asked them, please, you must never miss an email where Mkhwebane is conversing, is exchanging some ideas with these people, just to demonstrate that she's captured. Because once we establish that, the next morning will be the first ones at the door of the courts to have it.
Maybe the other lesson, Malema, is that you should listen to the DA sometimes. They told you she wasn't trustworthy.
Well, the information they had is the same information I had. But, you know, spies, they always give you wrong information. Sometimes they're engaged in information peddling and all that. So they gave us that information. But I was like, look, a black African female performed well. And I'm not going to use this unverified, reports about to disadvantage her.
So you gave her the benefit of the doubt.
Yes,
yeah.
And then she just proved us wrong immediately. She didn't hesitate. On arrival, changed TV stations to ANN 7 and then removed newspapers on the tables and put a new age in the tables there of a public protector's office. Yeah, so it's a mess, but we're working on it. We should find a way of correcting it.
Katleho.
Yes, sir.
What is your question for Julius?
I would just like to ask Mr. Malema if he really wants to give it all back to the ANC, meaning that he really wants to give the all vote back to the ANC.
That will never happen. We'll never give any vote to these corrupt mafias.
Katleho, I assume you are misspeaking. What do you mean?
I mean, like, if Mr. Malema really wants Mr. Zille to step down as the Western Cape Premier, then it really means that the ANC will get back the vote.
Okay, I'm not sure I understand that, but while we are on Zille, maybe I can turn it into a different question.
Yep.
You said yesterday that suspending her is pretty much a gimmick. If you're really serious, you need to get rid of her as premier.
Absolutely.
What if they don't get rid of her as premier?
No, we have made that clear yesterday that you cannot leave her as a premier. Otherwise, you're pushing us away. You're going to force us into a situation where we're going to have to fold our arms. We don't have to vote for the ANC. We'll just fold our arms when voting takes place. And then the DA will see to finish, because we gave the
opposition this is an ultimatum.
An opportunity to prove themselves, and then they are becoming another ANC where they protect an individual more than the party. When you say you are suspending her as from DA activities, how is she going to participate in the party caucus? How will you give her a mandate and to an extent where she says this mandate is illegal? She's supposed to engage with that mandate in the caucus and say, we can't take this type of a mandate. But she will not have such an opportunity. And then she will do on her own. So when Zille messes up the Western Cape, who do we blame? Because she can't sit in
the DA. I get that. What I'm asking you, because we're running out of time, we've just got 3 minutes left, is your English is too sophisticated for me. Sometimes you use figurative language, like when you told a certain interviewer, killing for Zuma doesn't mean it's the same as dress for killed. So when you are, say, folding your arm, and then yesterday you said it's 5-2. Is it now 2 minutes to? Can you be just plain speaking to me?
No, we'll abstain. We'll abstain. In Johannesburg, we'll abstain. In Tswane, we'll abstain. In PE, we'll abstain.
If they don't get rid of
We'll abstain in Mogale City. If they don't get rid of Zille as a premier, because they must stop playing with our people.
Okay. Elizabeth?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to ask Mr. Malema, if I love the land division plan that he's got, somebody is addressing the inequality finally, is it possible that we can also go to private property housing and subdivide the bigger properties and give ownership to disadvantaged people while the present owner is still also gets a small piece of the house? I mean, we've got big houses. Can we subdivide and bring the communities in to the suburbs so that we can become communities, different communities?
Thank you, Elizabeth. I see what you did there.
Well, if the idea is that we must subdivide, it's an idea we can entertain. But our idea is that bringing people to the suburbs is an idea that all of us must entertain, so that we have the coexistence of the rich and the poor, including white and black, in the same areas. There shouldn't be a land in between Alexander and Sandton unoccupied because we are told the owner stays in London. No, if it will give us an opportunity to bring our people closer to the suburbs, closer to the better services, let's do that.
Okay. Final question. Gavin, make it quick.
Quick, I'm going to be quick. Hello, Eusebius and Julius. Now, nationalization is not an end in itself. I'm talking about the banks here.
Yeah.
If the purpose is to facilitate access to capital for the marginalized, how does nationalization achieve this? Isn't it better and more achievable to look at legislation rather than ownership? Because ownership of the banks does not necessarily translate into better access. Bigger government means more opportunity for corruption.
Kevin, that's a giant question, but Julius, I'll give you 30 seconds.
No. I don't agree with it. I don't agree with it. Ownership is very important, because it is those who own who decide how they are going to give access to people towards the resources. So It is important, and nationalization doesn't mean the closure of private banks. If they want to coexist with a state-owned bank, let them do so. But they must meet the interest of a state-owned bank. They must compete with the lower interest of the state-owned bank. So the existence of the state-owned bank will force them to reduce their interest.
Okay. I'm going to montage and ask one more question, although I said I'd wrap up. Please just allow me. I want to come full circle back to the beginning, imagining yourself to be president. You know, the Americans are very cheesy about these things. They are divisive once there is primaries and once there is a fight for the elections. And then they come together and they say, I'm going to be an American president for all Americans, you know, blue Americans, red Americans. Are you capable of being a president of this country that people can love regardless of their race, class, linguistic, or other identities? You've got your core base, but once you have to imagine being the leader of an entire country, you've got to be a statesman.
Absolutely. Black and white. And with me being a president, you don't have to second guess me. You know what I stand for, and I say it the way it is. So that is the type of leadership we want, not a leadership which is not predictable. You need leadership which is honest, which is clear in terms of where it wants to take the country.
Jules, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having us.